Hello, this is Kyle Jones. As a preface to this lecture, I would like to state that historical astronomy and astrology have both given tremendous significance to, number one, nomenclature and fixing the positions of the locations of the, quote, real estate, if you will, in the heavens and on the earth by their contingent relations that can be found in written history. Number two, the importance of the philological meanings of all such heavenly bodies. Number three, the religious significance within the context of archaic historical and philological astrology. Number four, the actuation of regal and portentous astrological events and their historical significance. Finally, number five, helping to formulate the total sum of a theological, historical, and astrological synthesis. Lastly, I would like to quote Psalms 19 in order that we may establish biblical laws of first mention concerning the study. Quote, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoices as a strong man to run a race. His going forth is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends of it, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof." On March 20th, 6 BC, around 6 p.m., anyone living in the Judean province would have been able to see the moon occulting or blotting out Jupiter. Moreover, this planetary eclipse, or occultation, was eventuated in Aries. This same occultation continued to move across the sky towards the western hemisphere, where the sun, by its brightness, eventually did not allow for this particular occultation to be seen, though the occultation had continued onto early American shores. Such an event can be seen by NASA-based computer programs, which are now available to the common public. One of them, for which I am using in this lecture, allows for me to traject back and view the skies as our ancient Babylonian, Persian, Greek, and Roman historical forefathers saw. And with somewhat of a hint, using this program, you can also traject forward into time as well, to view the skies and their significance within a theological framework. In regards to the activity in the heavens on March 20th, 6 BC, we have, a second time, where the occultation of Jupiter by the moon took place in the Judean province. This event occurred on April 17th, BC 6. Both Jupiter and the moon were in Aries. Aries, being the sign of the regal sacrificial animal, was observed with constellational and earthly import. Aries was, as we have already laid out in our prior lectures, a symbol of regal importance in Sumeria, and had affected nearly all views of astrology from beginning cultures such as Sumeria, all the way to the Roman-ruled Judean province of the 1st century BC. In Matthew 2, verses 9 through 10, it states, quote, "When they," that is, the wise men or magi, or the tous magus in the Greek text, "had heard the king, they departed. And lo, the star, which they saw in the east, went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding joy." The English of the Bible seems to show somewhat of a contradiction of traditional accounts concerning this eastern star and the biblically mentioned magi, 4. If the Magi were traveling towards the star of Bethlehem, that is, quote, towards the east, end quote, yet themselves, being in the east, or as some would say, Persia, and traveling towards Bethlehem, we would be given a major sense of misdirection. For that matter, if the Magi were in Bethlehem, the star would definitely be seen in the east, which is going back toward Persia, and not west of them. Another problem seems to occur in the English Bible is that the star stops and stands over the child, which seems to contradict the ostensible motion of the zodiac. But all seeming contradictions can be answered if we employ a little philology and understanding of retrograde motion to our biblical treatment here. In our biblical Greek text found in Matthew chapter 2, verse 9, we have our Greek phrase, en te anatole, which means, quote, at the rising. This planetary rising, which rises before the sun, can also be referred to as the heliacal rising, which means at the morning appearance. Interestingly, en te anatole is used twice by Matthew, both in chapter 2, verse 2 and verse 9. This term was a prominent astrological term used in the first century due to many reasons. Specifically and literally, heliacal rising meant, quote, when a planetary body rises before the sun as a morning star. Such an idea of en te anatole was used in a much deeper theological construction in the oldest book in the Bible, the book of Job. And for a copy of this treatment, please ask us for a CD and a transcript. With that said, heliacal risings have figured heavily in the history of astrological mythologies and theologies. To the first century astrologers, the emergence of a planet from the burning heat of the sun meant a new birth of cosmic power and its importance of cyclical deaths and rebirths. All which to say, heliacal risings religiously and mythologically mean, quote, out of the fiery trials we are purified and have rebirth. To the ancients, as a planet moved away from the sun, the planet's influences were believed to be manifested powerfully. According to first century Greek astrology, a planet's heliacal rising, along with its connected and subsequent phases, appeared as a morning star. And coming out of the sun, the planet was at its most significant period in its processions around the sky. That is, the period in which its astrological influences were greatest. To the first century Greek astrologer, this meant they were given the most respect of the planet during this procession. Though not used in astronomy, Ptolemy, in his work called the Almagest, meaning the greatest, showed us that the time of the heliacal rising always depended upon the planet's brightness. It also depended upon the position of the rising sun below the eastern horizon. And finally, it depended upon the latitude of the observer. Ptolemy showed us in his Almagest that for the springtime, when the sun is in Aries, Jupiter must be at least 20 degrees from the sun to be visible from Alexandria, Egypt. When the sun is in Libra in the fall, the angle decreases to about 10 degrees. Our early Babylonian astrologers saw the sun as a ring of fire, wherewith the planets entering would die, then come out, regenerated with new life, new meaning, and new significance and power. Because of this belief, astrologers adopted a standard fixed distance from the sun for each planet's heliacal rising, a distance that did not require calculation of a planet's actual visibility. Each planet had its own angular distance of safety from the sun, and that angle applied to all risings during the year. Ptolemy and other astrologers tell us that Jupiter, for example, emerged from the sun's ring of fire at 12 degrees. This belief in the burning power of the sun is emphasized by Firmicus. He discusses the power of the sun to suppress the influences of Jupiter. Moreover, the astrological significance of Jupiter is greater if it is in the same sign as the Sun. If Jupiter and the Sun are in conjunction and Jupiter is hidden by the Sun's rays, this diminishes the whole fortune. But if Jupiter is freed from the Sun's rays and in a morning rising is together with the Sun in the same sign, this indicates high honor and position. Jupiter had one heliacal rising in all of recorded history. Such a date was on April 17th, BC 6, the very date that we have been fixing on concerning Christ's incarnation in Bethlehem. Such a date as April 17th, BC 6 coincides exactly with the second lunar occultation of Jupiter, which is another constellate and regal occurrence and was of utmost importance to Antigonus of Nicaea, who had recorded the astrological events that had taken place on April 17th, BC 6. Concerning this particular day, Emperor Hadrian's regal horoscope for Roman propaganda would again be enforced. For even the Romans understood the importance of April 17th's astrological eventuation. I will read Antigonus' words recorded by Hephaestio of Thebes that can be found in Van Hosen's, quote, Greek horoscopes and also Kramer's, quote, astrological signs in Roman law. As a preface, please keep in mind the terms of Roman astrological vocabulary would later be corrected in modernity, such as Antigonus's, quote, moon, end quote, being referred to as a planet. But what is significant is this, that the heavenly lights and their relative mythological, theological meanings had been brought through the millennia as a solid state and culturally relevant system of theology, as is shown within the late Babylonian, Greek, Roman, Chinese, Hindu, Jewish, and Persian astrological treatments. So, what was important and significant back then should carry great import and significance to us. Lastly, though we define the moon to be a moon versus a planet by its relative motion to the earth, calling the moon a planet in the first millennia AD had no bearing of inaccuracy concerning motion and light. Antigonus says, quote, Hadrian became emperor because of the presence of the two planets, Jupiter and the moon, within the horoscope's degree. This event was special because the moon was on the ascendant, which coincides with the horoscopic degree, and also because Jupiter was about to rise in its morning phase in the east, or Anatole, within 7 days. Jupiter became one of the moon's attendant planets, themselves being in their houses. Concerning these events, Venus was, quote, being, end quote, in the exaltation of, or hupsoma, of her own house, which is Pisces. Mars was also in his own triangle, which was Cancer, Scorpius, and Pisces. Both planets, that is, Venus and Mars, are close together and about to rise soon after the moon. Moreover, the Sun, which is the cosmic ruler, is also the moon's attendant. The Sun himself is in turn attended by Saturn in his own house or decan, which is Capricorn, and also by Mercury, both Saturn and Mercury being in their Anatole or morning rising. It remains to be shown that the moon too was about to be in conjunction with a bright fixed star in the 20th degree. For one must not only pay attention only to the conjunction of the planets, but also the fixed stars. Signed, Antigonus of Nicaea. Well, what an amazing thing that Antigonus failed to note that these conjunctions and heliacal risings occurred at the same time, which would have signaled to even the earlier Babylonian that a king was being born. Furthermore, the sun had exalted itself in Aries, which was regally significant to the Jew, that a new-born king of Judea was coming to power. Well, next week, we will cover Jupiter's retrograde motion and its significance to the great star in Bethlehem. For a copy of this lecture, or for any further questioning, you can call me at area code 615-289-7882, or you can contact me at kylejones37075@yahoo.com. Until next week, God bless. This is Kyle Jones.